So with that, it is my pleasure as a technical moderator to turn the floor to Cindy Frickel, who's joining us from EPA's Technology Innovation and Field Services Division, to provide an introduction to our speaker and his topic today. Cindy, I'll turn the floor to you.
Thank you, Jean, and thanks for getting us started, and thanks to everyone who's joining us today. I already got my introduction, but I'm Cindy Frickel. I'm with Jean here in the Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation. We're in EPA's headquarters in Washington, D.C., and we are very pleased to host today's webinar highlighting the work of Christian Johnson and others at the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory. In the Superfund program, we encounter many sites where soil vapor intrusion is a concern. Vapor intrusion is a concern. And we frequently use vapor mitigation systems, including soil vapor extraction or SVE. We often see these SVE systems come to a point of diminishing returns, which is precisely what brings us here today. We encourage our own project managers and others in our industry to use tools such as the one you'll learn about today to support important decisions that help us protect human health and the environment. Before I hand over the mic, I'd like to introduce our speaker, Christian Johnson. He brings us a wealth of knowledge from 3 decades of work in environmental restoration and remediation technology research and development at PNNL. He has designed and implemented ex situ and in situ bioremediation systems for treatment of hydrocarbons and chlorinated solvents at U.S. Department of Energy, Department of Defense, and private industry sites. Mr. Johnson has been a developer for many tools in addition to the one that we'll see today. These include the Multi-Species Reactive Transport Simulation, RT3D software, the Socrates web-based suite for analysis of water level, contaminant plume, and remediation system data, the AIM toolbox for assessment of aquifer injections, the STASL PNNL neutron dosimetry software, and the ICP OES data reduction tool, or DRT, for analytical data analysis. Mr. Johnson co-authored the guidance documents for assessing SVE, which we'll learn about today. And as a companion to that guidance, Mr. Johnson was a developer of the SVEET software for assessing the impact of remaining vadozone source material on groundwater or vapor intrusion. Now, I would like to hand it over to Chris to tell us all about those. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Let me share my screen here and get started. So thanks, Cindy, and thanks everybody for joining us today. Really looking forward to talking about our soil vapor extraction guidance and the tool that goes along with it. So let's see. I want to actually start out. So I'm at PNNL, which is the Department of Energy National Laboratory. So we developed this tool, and I've got a team of a lot of people behind me that really helped develop the guidance and tool, including folks like Dave Becker and Carl Harms from Corps of Engineers, NAVFAC folks like Jovan Popovich and others that really worked on the guidance and worked on this tool to bring it to fruition. The funding has been provided by Department of Energy initially for version one, and then ESTCP provided funding to upgrade to version two of SVEET. So we'll go through some of that work on the upgrade and show you what the changes are and talk about the guidance and how it's applied. So this is the outline for today. We're going to kind of hit on soil vapor extraction, performance assessment, talk about the guidance, about making decisions for vadozone remediation using structured guidance and decision logic. We'll talk about quantifying the impacts of a vadozone source on groundwater and soil gas concentrations. And so that's where the SVEET2 tool comes into play and the ESTCP work. And then we'll look at a couple of example applications and then finish up with some key takeaways. So actually, let me go back here. I'm going to pause. We have a poll. I want to start out with a poll. So Jean, if you could put that up,
Yes.
I'll ask you some questions and kind of get an idea of where you folks are at.
All right, absolutely. So I'm about to click a button here, and a new window is going to pop up on the screen with 2 questions. So we're asking the audience if they could share some information about their experience or background with SVE. The first question will ask, how many SVE sites do you oversee? And you'll be presented with four options. Simply click the circle to the left of the answer that you think is correct, and then scroll on down to the second question, which asks, where are you in the process of using SVE? Are you just starting out? Are you thinking about it and prepping for a performance assessment? Have you completed a performance assessment? Or perhaps you have not yet used SVE. And if you feel other is the appropriate answer, go right ahead. And you can also chime in through the Q&A and explain where you're at if you've picked other, if you like. But once you're done clicking those circles, hit the submit button at the bottom of that window, and that will cast your response so that we can tally them up and get a sense of who's joining us virtually. Christian, as of right now, about 3/4 of the audience have sent in their answers. And remember, there's no wrong answer. He just wants to know a little bit more about who he's talking to. And I do encourage you to share any thoughts or additional background that you have in the Q&A, particularly if you picked other for that second question. So looking at this, I see about 86%. Christian, I'm going to go ahead and close the poll out at 3, 2, 1, and we'll share those results. And it does look like over half of the audience oversees about 1 to 3 SVE sites, but 1/4 of the audience doesn't work with or oversee any of them. And then the rest of the audience has a significantly larger pool that they're working with. And I'm starting to see some messages in here. Just some people have done dozens of SVE projects in the past, right? So they're very familiar with it. And then in terms of the process, it does look like I'd say the bulk of the audience is sort of midway through. They're either thinking about it, prepping it, or they've done one of these assessments. But we do have a number that are just starting out or haven't used it yet.
Right. Great. That's really it's interesting to see. And one of the main purposes of our talk today is really tech transfer to make folks aware of this guidance and tool. And hopes that it will be helpful for your sites. So with that, I'll keep going here and continue to the next slide here. So typically when we have contamination in the VEDA zone, there's some typical kind of questions that we might ask about that. First might be, if you're just starting out, is soil vapor extraction needed? Essentially you're asking what is the risk to groundwater or for vapor intrusion? Is this a significant enough problem that groundwater is impacted? We need to do a remedy like SVE, or maybe not. And most of the time, the answer is probably yes, but that's your natural first question. You might also ask, what are the performance goals for soil vapor extraction? What concentrations do we need to get down to such that the groundwater is not impacted or impacted at a low enough level, or the same for soil gas? And as we go through the process of using SVE, again, we typically see diminishing returns. So we might be asking, can SVE be terminated and still be protective of receptors? So does the remaining mass represent a threat still? And then finally, you might ask about, can alternative technologies address the remaining mass? Is SVE doing its job? Or do we need an alternative technology to meet our remediation goals? So I think most people are familiar with soil vapor extraction. I'll just hit on that briefly here. Essentially, we're using vacuum extraction to pull vapors out of the VEDA zone to remove volatile contaminants. And that's typically effective. You may have some low permeability zones that got contaminated. And so there may be some contaminant mass kind of bleeding out of those areas. And we'll typically see a pattern where initially you run the soil vapor extraction and you're removing lots of mass. And then that trails off and you get the diminishing returns. And so the question is, again, are we done? We don't necessarily want to keep running this for decades and decades if it's not going to, if there's no impact to the groundwater. So that's what we're trying to assess here. What's our next steps? That's one of the key questions. So PNNL put together some soil vapor extraction guidance. And this is a Truex et al. 2013 document. I'll have references at the end here. We did this. We had some Corps of Engineers co-authors as well as an EPA co-author to look at what's the appropriate approach to walk through assessment of your sites and the performance of the SVE system and determine the next steps. So it's a structured approach that's really about gathering and updating information, quantifying impacts, and then applying this decision logic. And it's, again, really here to help site managers make these remediation decisions about the VetoZone remediation. Do we continue to optimize, terminate, transition, or potentially reassess remedy goals? So Suite 2, the Suite software, is a companion to this guidance. We released version 1 with this guidance, updated to version 2, and that comes into play with the quantification of impacts that I'll talk about. So I'm going to walk through the guidance in a kind of higher level here. There's a lot more detail in the guidance document itself. But we're going to start out with looking at the conceptual site model. So this is a key piece of information to help you understand your site and frame the remediation activities. And so this is really combining multiple types of data together. So things, the information about the VetoZone structure and properties, what does it look like for recharge and groundwater flow? What's the contaminant source look like in the VetoZone? And it's important to come back and revisit this. You know, conceptual site models are typically put together initially when you're characterizing a site and understanding what's happening and determining what the appropriate remedies are. But after you've run your SVE system for a while, it's important to bring in new information, right? If you've added additional wells or you have the operations data from the SVE system, bring that in to help inform your CSM and update that. The next item here is for the environmental impact and compliance context. So again, this may be something that was defined originally, and you just want to make sure it's up to date and consistent with the current situation. And there's really kind of two main exposure pathways typically for soil vapor extraction. You're either looking at impacts to groundwater and potential groundwater receptors or vapor intrusion. What are the impacts for vapor intrusion? The surface exposure pathway is typically not an issue for a soil vapor extraction situation. You wouldn't want to consider that if it makes sense at your site, but it's typically the vapor intrusion and groundwater pathways that are relevant here. So the next step is the quantification. And so there's really some sub-steps here to talk about what does your VetoZone contaminant source look like? What's the location? What's the strength of that source in terms of either mass discharge or vapor concentrations? You want to either, if you're looking at groundwater, you want to estimate the impact to groundwater. And there's a couple of different scenarios here, depending on groundwater concentrations. You might have mass transfer from the VetoZone to groundwater, or you might have some impacts of a groundwater concentration that transfers it up into the VetoZone. So different scenarios to consider as you're estimating that impact to groundwater. Alternately, if you're interested in vapor intrusion, you'd want to estimate that impact in terms of soil gas concentrations and how the vapor intrusion, what those concentrations would be. And then finally, we'll consider the impact of source decay and depletion. So what happens to the source over time, as well as attenuation processes such as sorption and biodegradation that may occur and affect the contaminant transport and concentrations. So I'll talk about some of the source information. I'm going to kind of cover this briefly here. The guidance has a lot more information. Folks like Casey Carroll and Mark Brousseau and others have done a lot of work to look at how do you do assessment of sources. And you can use things like existing wells where you do discharge tests, evaluate the data over time from a single well, multiple wells around the area of interest to identify where is that source really at. Source configuration is another aspect of that. You might have one source, it's all together, kind of like something in this picture here, and highlighter out here. So in this picture here, you might have a low permeability zone that contains some residual source mass or you might have some discrete separate sources of some sort. So we've done some work to look at this, and these you can represent these different sources in terms of a long-term mass flux and source strength. They're all about the same. I mean, they're little different configurations, but the dashed line is what's the effective consolidated source look like. And so we did some numerical simulations to look at this and compare these. And there's only a small effect if you have different configurations versus the consolidated source. And so the source strength was another aspect of this. And this is where you can look at SVE system data in particular to quantify source strength. If you do things like a rebound analysis and estimate the source strength after you halt your SVE system, let it rebound, and then start it again, and you get collect data based on that. So again, Mark Rousseau and others have done a lot of work on that. This is covered in more detail and points at additional resources and guidance on how you go about actually performing this, but essentially it's a rebound analysis. So the guidance puts together, once you've gathered all this information on the conceptual site model, the regulatory context, the impacts to soil gas and groundwater, then we have a decision logic tree here. And so this is where you'd walk through, you have your information, you walk through the tree, and it asks specific questions that lead to different outcomes. And the outcomes include the terminate, continue, optimize, enhance, or supplement SVE, or maybe use an alternate technology. So this is really, you know, are we done here? Or is it basically working fine? Or maybe do we need to tweak the system, optimize it in terms of which wells are used? Or is it just not working like we want? And maybe we can enhance the technology that targets some particular areas or hotspots. Or we might just say, well, this is not going to cut it in the time frame of interest. We need to find a more aggressive technology. So I'll just kind of list out a few examples here for some potential options. For optimization or enhancement, again, we might focus on extraction in particular areas to get higher mass removal. We might add or replace extraction wells to get a better spatial distribution, or maybe the screen intervals aren't quite right, so we need to have better intervals. We might add passive or active air injection wells to help the air throughput. We could try some different operational strategies like pulsing the extraction system on and off, you know, on for a while, off for a while, just do that cycle of on and off to try and pull out, be more efficient at pulling out mass. Potentially look at passive extraction, or maybe you need to use something like hydraulic or pneumatic fracturing to increase permeability. In terms of supplemental or replacement technologies, there's things like bioventing, multi-phase extraction, in situ air sparging, thermal treatment, or oil injection to help improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the treatment remedy. So I'm going to talk now about SVEET and go through what is SVEET and talk a little bit about our ESTCP work. So in short, it's a user-friendly spreadsheet tool. This is really designed as something that's easy to use. Again, a lot of the work that we've done here at Hanford, that folks like Mike Truex, Casey Carroll, looked at transport in the Vado zone and determined that there's a small number of parameters that really control contaminant migration. And so this tool allows you to input this small number of parameters and get estimates on concentrations of groundwater and soil gas. So again, we updated through the ESTCP project to get version 2 of SVEET. And we're really, this came from essentially requests of folks that were using SVEET to say, hey, you know, my site's a little bit different. So we really just want to expand the applicability beyond some of the typical Department of Energy sites to more broadly be applicable to DOD or other folks. So We enhanced the functionality, expanded some ranges, and this is a potential basis for potentially having some reductions in cost to complete the remedy. You know, if it turns out that you've got diminishing returns and there's little impact to groundwater, then maybe it's time to go to M&A and stop the soil vapor extraction. SFEET has a rigorous underlying basis. The original version ran 972 numerical simulations as pre-modeled scenarios. When we expanded for ESCCP, that went up to 5,760. So that's a lot of numerical simulations that we've done ahead of time, and then you can take advantage of through the SFEET tool. And it's all about contaminant transport under natural conditions, where vapor phase to diffusion is the dominant transport mechanism, but we do include things like recharge and mixing in the groundwater. So SFEET itself is not a numerical model, but it uses the results from these pre-modeled scenarios and interpolates between those to provide estimates that are appropriate for your site conditions. And then it does some scaling for others. There's nonlinear impacts and there's linear impacts. So the linear ones are just scaling. So SFEET is based on a generalized conceptual framework that's shown here. So again, looking at the key parameters, we obviously can't represent every individual site, but we want to have a general framework of the beta zone and groundwater. So this includes the source area, defined as a cuboid here, rectangular footprint, or excuse me, a square footprint with a thickness. It's located somewhere within the beta zone. So we quantify where is this located. That's the relative source position. Is it up near the top of the beta zone, near the bottom, somewhere in the middle? We got the footprint. We got the groundwater flow rates is defined here. What's the thickness of the beta zone? That has an impact. And then the residual moisture content is another key parameter. So these are all key parameters for the simulations that have nonlinear impacts on concentration estimates. In addition, we include information on recharge, partitioning Henry's law between aqueous and air phases, and then what's the strength of the source, either described as a gas concentration or a mass flux. So for the numerical simulations, those 5,000 some simulations we did, we used the STOMP numerical code, developed PNNL. So this is a fully implicit finite difference model, multi-phase model. So it includes conservation equations for water, VOCs, and air. We use a specific domain that we define, 2,000 meters long, 500 meters wide, and variable height depending on the case, because we're looking at different beta zone thicknesses. And we had grid refinement near the water table and source boundaries, so we have good resolution at the required locations. So we started out with a base case of parameters and then varied from there. And I'll show you more about the ranges of those here in a second. The carbon tetrachloride was the base case VOC. And then we use scaling with the Henry's law constant and other properties, molecular weight, and so on, to translate this to other VOCs. So the SVE process itself is not simulated in these pre-modeled scenarios. That's not where we're after here. We're interested in, we have a beta zone source with a specified strength and location. What's the impact of that on groundwater and soil gas without other processes going on? So no active pumping for the SVE. And then to model this, we used an immobile organic liquid phase as a source zone, again, in that cuboidal source at a specific saturation. And then that was maintained at a constant source strength over time. And we ran these transport simulations for about 200 years to reach steady, we want to make sure we reach steady state conditions. So there's a number of assumptions with this. The water content was mean uniform across throughout the Vado zone. Again, the mass loading was maximized by imposing water saturation in a specific range. And the water table was assumed to be effectively horizontal over the computational domain. Gas phase diffusion and tortuosity were assumed to not be affected by the organic liquid content in the source zone. And then sorption was neglected because it's really a transient effect, but it doesn't impact the long-term distribution of contaminant mass throughout the Vado zone and into groundwater. So as an example, this is just a cross-section through one of the simulation results. This is the kind of information that was determined. It's the VOC transport throughout the Vado zone. And then we've got the water tables down here at the bottom. So we included some mixing in there and actually have, there's additional grid cells below this to represent the aquifer. And that information was used for the groundwater concentration. But this would represent the soil gas distribution throughout the Vado zone. And again, we're using carbon tet here as an example. So I talked a little bit about relationships of different parameters to groundwater concentrations. And again, there's some that are linear. And this, here's an example of the source gas concentration, for example. As you increase that, it's just a linear impact on the concentration of the groundwater. Other parameters such as the source area or the relative source position are nonlinear. So this is why we're doing 5,000 some simulations. Linear parameters, it's easy just to scale that, multiply by a factor. But the simulations were needed to capture this nonlinearity in that relationship. Once we do all the simulations, we essentially end up with 64 different variations. So if you define the key parameters for your site, we're going to interpolate between these 64 simulations to come up with an estimate for your particular site conditions. And so that's what this is. It's just doing estimating between parameters and keep go from parameter to parameter to come up with your final result. Once we get this result from the numerical models and the interpolation, then we do the scaling for things, the contaminant-specific information, recharge, source strength. Those are linear parameters. So we compared stomp results. We did actual simulations, and we compared what the interpolation looks like and found that the interpolation tracks well with the simulations. So that was a good result with that. And just to give you an idea, as you vary different parameters, what are the impacts? So I think this is something that you can play around with this in SFEED itself. It's easy to do different cases and look at this. But this kind of gives you an idea that if you, so as you increase the parameter input values, what happens with the concentrations in the groundwater? So you increase temperature, it decreases. You had more going into the volatile and into the vapor, et cetera, right? So some of these increase, some decrease. As they're increased, the impact on groundwater increases or decreases. So this is the SFEET 2 interface. Again, it's a spreadsheet tool. There's a lot to this. We've got a lot of notes in here, right? There's a user guide that goes with this. But the spreadsheet itself shows the generalized conceptual model, talks about permissible ranges for the different parameters, has various notes, footnotes about what these mean and what assumptions were. There's a color code listing legend here. So some of these colors, like the light blue is an input. We've got some intermediate calculations and final results. But then there's some warning colors like the red that says, you have an input information, or the dark blues, we have some blank cells. So that's all described here. And there's a space here for five different cases. So you can add information and look at how variations and parameters change all in one group here. And yeah, so if there's an error that shows up, you know, some red cell that shows up in your inputs, you're not going to get a result until that gets fixed. And maybe you're outside the permissible range or something like that. So for the ESCCP project, we updated Sweet in a number of areas. One of the things that we did a survey of DoD sites to ask about their SVE applications, particular aspects, you know, what's your vadozone thickness, what kind of contaminants do you have? So we compiled all that information and used that to define what our updates would look like. So we did add a number of additional VOCs as contaminants. We expanded the number of concurrent scenarios from 3 to 5. We changed a bunch of the input parameter ranges to allow a broader range. Again, trying to target this wider range of conditions beyond typical arid DOE sites. And I'll show an example. We kind of started out doing this for Hanford. So I'll show an example of that. But these all expand beyond those ranges, so it's more applicable across the United States. So all these different, the recharge, the SRs, the residual saturation, vadozone thickness, relative source position, where is that source, the footprint of the source, and the groundwater flow rate. So all those were updated. And then we allowed the specification of porosity and bulk density. Site-specific information on that. So this is another view of those key parameters here, just to show you how it was expanded. So the items in red are new values. So as we did our survey, you know, there were some sites that had much smaller vadozone thickness and actually much larger. There were some that had larger footprints or the source thickness ratio was greater. Residual moisture saturation was greater, greater velocity, groundwater, and the relative source position could be different, either much closer to the top or much closer to the groundwater. So again, that was that expansion to 5,000 simulations. So, and it was a lot of effort to run all these and manage the output. And so that's where my team comes into play of folks that really help with that. And I had a couple of interns that helped. In particular, with some of the data compression to manage the data. So the Sweet 2 assumptions and limitations, so these really come from the numerical model configuration and those assumptions. We've got vapor phase transport that dominates, you know, the contaminant movement, migration. So we do have recharge-driven transport, but the assumption is that vapor phase transport is the dominant mechanism. The groundwater is assumed to be initially uncontaminated. The contaminant source is, again, it's the generalized conceptual model, so that's represented as a single source area or a consolidated source area, as I discussed earlier. We're looking at a homogeneous subsurface with uniform properties. So again, just like adsorption, if you had a layer in there, that really imparts transient effects. In the long-term steady state, the layers are unimportant for the distribution at steady state. And so that's the next item here, is that these are steady state and equilibrium site conditions that we're talking about. We do have a constant strength source, as I mentioned with the simulations. So there's no source depletion. So that would be something else to kind of think about. Here's the speed estimates, but maybe if your site had source depletion, that might be an additional aspect. And so speed actually, with respect to this, is more conservative. We do look at groundwater concentrations based on a well screen that starts at the water table. So if you're at a well screen that was lower in the aquifer, this would overestimate the concentrations and be conservative again. And it does not include adsorption, right? I talked about that. We also don't include biological reactions and degradation. So again, those would attenuate concentrations. So SVEET would be more conservative in its estimates. And we don't look at, for the groundwater, off-plume centerline concentrations. We're just looking at the plume center eye and the highest concentrations. For our demonstration with ESCCP, we had two types of demonstrations we did. The first one was ground truthing, where we wanted to look at least two sites. And we had to find some sites that were essentially at equilibrium conditions, right? Because we're trying to ground truth what do the observations look like versus what is sweep estimate. We wanted to look at soil gas and groundwater concentration data. And we had a performance metric that says the observed values had to be within 3 standard deviations of the sweep sensitivity results. And we ran a Monte Carlo analysis with a whole bunch of different cases, 2,500 cases for the input parameters to look at the range of outputs. The second type was really some user testing. And this had a couple of components, is mainly just what do users, DOD, we're talking about DOD folks, what do they think of how to use this and how useful is SWEET for making some remedy decisions about SVE. So we got some qualitative feedback. And then we had some sites that actually, applied this and looked at it relative to their existing systems. And I'll show some information on some of those results. In terms of the ground truthing demo, so this is a McClellan IC-1, McClellan Air Force Base. This was had a groundwater impact from PCE, tetrachloroethane. So they, again, we looked at the observed data. We ran all these Monte Carlo analysis with the SWEET and did a comparison for 3 monitoring wells. And the SWEET estimates met the performance objectives in terms of being within the defined metrics. So that was a good example. We had one site, soil gas cases were a little harder to find, but we did have one. It's the Corps of Engineers Cold Regions Lab. So we looked at soil vapor gas concentrations for that. And this one also met the defined metrics. So overall, SWEET provided some reasonable concentration estimates based on this ground truthing demo. We had 6 cases that matched the observed data, meeting its performance metrics. There were 3 cases with estimates less than the observed data, but the estimates were all within a factor of 2 or 3. So they underestimated what was observed, but pretty close. And then we had 4 cases that where the estimates were larger than the observed data. And so again, most of the assumptions in SWEET are intended to be conservative in terms of estimating higher concentrations. So these are 4 cases where we saw that. And it's, again, I'll point out, it's challenging to find sites that met the assumptions in terms of the equilibrium. And I want to distinguish between, ground truthing, trying to match actual data versus an application to support remedy decisions. Those are different situations. But we were generally successful with that. The demo for the usability, so the second part of the demo. We had 14 sites that had applied this, looked at SWEET. 93% of those thought that this was applicable. They did note a few issues. So there's a couple sites that had maybe the recharge was greater than even what the expanded version of SWEET 2 would allow, or maybe the site size might be too small, too thin for the permissible ranges in SWEET. So, but overall, it was broadly applicable. And the sites thought that the SWEET was very applicable and helpful. It's user-friendly, straightforward to do the inputs. And those are inputs that are readily available from existing site data. So it's not like we have to go out and collect a bunch more data. It's typically data that already exists that can be compiled and put into SWEET. So they found that it was easy to vary the inputs and run multiple scenarios and do what-if analyses. This is a spreadsheet tool, so you get rapid results. I mean, it put in numbers, gives you the results. So that was a major benefit versus traditional approaches like site-specific numerical models. takes a lot less labor effort. That's less data intensive, lower cost to obtain the estimated impacts, but it does still require a similar level of professional judgment and assumptions. So this is, you know, on par with the traditional approaches that somebody knowledgeable needs to be running this. The what if scenarios were helpful, particularly when you have a lot of uncertainty about your parameters. Maybe you don't know the source area, source strength or location as well. You could run these what if scenarios. And one site noted that that really provides some insight into the controlling processes. And overall, this provides useful information for decision making. So this is a one site did an application. This particular site had 8 SVE systems. So they used FEET2 to look at trichloroethylene sources at these systems. These are systems that would, in recent times, they were operating during the warmer weather, but shut down in the winter. And so source strengths estimates were based on soil gas concentrations at the end of the winter shutdown period, after they had time to rebound. They found that the source zone geometry was challenging to define. And again, I think this was based on information that they had. They didn't go out and do specific testing like you find some of the information in the guidance document on how to do that. So it was a little bit challenging to define that. And then they used multiple cases for each of the systems in their assessment. And I'm just showing a few examples here, but they did a number of cases for each site. So the SVEET2 results were compared to a couple of things. They're compared to the MCLs, or the cleanup goals. So if the results were less than the MCL, that implied that they could shut down the system. And then they also compared to actual groundwater monitoring results. So the outcome of this was that for 5 of the systems, the SVEET estimates were less than the cleanup goals, the MCLs. And in 3 systems, the estimates were greater than the MCL. And that then all aligned with the actual observed groundwater monitoring data. So here's an example where we had a concentration estimated by SVEET was greater than the MCL. And here's an example where it was less than the MCL. So just a couple little examples. So they took that information and actually looked at, well, you know, what could be the implications of this? Again, we had the 5 locations where we could, SVEET says we could shut down. And so, and 3 that would have to keep running. So based on the annual operating costs, you know, we put together some numbers here that says, well, if we run or shut down, we could have a potential cost savings around $660K, about 61.5% decrease in annual operating cost. And so since we've done this, since they did this analysis, there are actually 2 of the systems that were recommended for shutdown that they're moving forward with those. So, and just again, some additional information based on the usability feedback. They had personnel that were unfamiliar with the SVEET software, and it probably took about 16 hours of labor to run some site-specific scenarios. And that includes the download and install, learning about SVEET, gathering the site data, and then performing the data analysis. And most of that time was really spent in gathering the site data and then running a few scenarios. So again, overall, it's less labor costs than traditional approaches. All right, so I'm going to look at a couple of examples of applying this process, the guidance, and the SVEET tool. And one is the Hanford site, and then a private site where they were setting performance targets. So the Hanford site has, if you're not familiar with it, historical practices included taking waste and going out to a trench in the back and dumping it into the trench. So that included aqueous waste and carbon tetrachloride. So that obviously infiltrated into the subsurface. So back in about 1992, the site conceptual model looked like we have here, with a lot of carbon tetrachloride from free phase as well as vapor, spread throughout the beta zone. There's a low permeability zone here in this darker color, and then eventually it made its way down to the groundwater. So soil vapor extraction was initiated in 1992. And one of the pictures I showed earlier with the diminishing returns depicts really what was going on here. They initially got out lots of mass. By 1997, conceptual model looked more like this, where there's the remaining source material was right around the low permeability zone. And then by 2014, it's decreased even further. Okay. So this is the evolving CSM over time. And this kind of illustrates where why you need to go back and look at your CSM, use the additional data that you've gathered, operational data or characterization, additional wells, to understand how has your conceptual site model changed over time. So the Hanford site took the guidance and used that approach. They built their own little flow chart here, essentially the same as what I've shown earlier, where they're reassessing the conceptual site model, looking at the regulatory context and the environmental impact pathways, quantifying the impacts, and then going through a decision process to determine what the outcome is. And they have some additional things in here that are site specific. You know, if such and such happens, well, we're going to go back and rerun the system, right? So they had a plan for what to do next. And so this approach was presented to the regulators, EPA and Washington Department of Ecology, and presented as here's the plan. This is where we're at. This is what we're going to go through, the structured approach. We're going to make this evaluation and determine the outcomes. And that was agreed to with the regulators. So they looked at the source strength. They'd been running the SVE system in a cyclic operation, again, so on for a while, off for a while, and use that information to define the source strength. We ended up using concentration data in suite, but we had some mass discharge data as well that was important for the long-term evaluation. So again, here's the conceptual model at present time with the remaining source in this low permeability Cold Creek unit. We could define the footprint based on what was known from wells around there. And the soil gas concentrations were relatively low by this time. So the other key factor with this is that there is remaining carbon tet in the groundwater. So the mass transfer is actually from groundwater to vadosum at the site. So we use feet to calculate and estimate soil vapor impacts to groundwater. The depth of the site is such that the vapor intrusion is not a pathway of concern. So we're looking at groundwater. And again, the speed is assuming the underlying aquifer is clean and there's no carbon tet sources in the groundwater. And that the vadosum source remains constant over time. So we took that information. There were actually three different sites, three different cribs and trenches that they used. So we looked at each of those had a source gas concentration and what was the estimated groundwater concentration from those. And so based on that, and also looking at source depletion, right? I talked about mass discharge from the source. So during soil vapor extraction, we had a certain mass discharge from the source. And then we estimated how that would change if you turn off the SVE system. And so there's a pretty steep decline while you're doing SVE, but we expect depletion from diffusion would decrease over time. So this information was used to calculate impacts to groundwater over time. So initially we had kind of higher concentrations, but as the source depletes, we look at the estimates over time and that decreases down to the remedial action objective, which in this case is 3.4 micrograms per liter. So this is the impact from the vadosum source, this blue line here. The concentrations in the groundwater are represented by this orangish line here, There's a pump and treat remedy occurring, so that's intended to clean up the groundwater. And they're targeting, I think it was a 25-year duration for pumping, and then they'd have another 100 years of monitored natural attenuation. So the impact from the vadosone source is negligible relative to what's in the groundwater and the remediation plans for groundwater. So the outcome of this was to turn off the SDE system because the impact was minor from the vadosone source and the soil gas concentration objective met in the vadosone. So the other example I wanted to talk about is for a Superfund site in the southwestern United States, where there was some liquid disposal in the, back in the 1979-80 time frame. That's an 80-foot thick vadosone with sand and gravel over silty sand. There's some buried basalt flows. And they had implemented some remedies, a cap, put a cap on the site, did pump and treat and soil vapor extraction. That was installed in the early 90s and operated with for a number of years. They used the thermal oxidizer to treat the off gas. And then they restarted in 2006 with pressure condensation treatment. So they've used some different above ground treatments for the off gas. They had a lot of mass removal. And then they later shifted to carbon treatment for the off gas. Right. So the goals for the SVE system had been reset several times. They initially looked at SE soil estimates from that particular software code to determine performance goals. That was revised in 2009 based on some leaching studies and the state soil screening levels. But they weren't really, none of that was really accounting for the vapor transport to the water table. They had reached concentrations close to the 2009 goals, but were still had a lot of mass recovery. So they decided to revisit those goals in 2015 using SFEET. We made a few adjustments to SFEET for that particular site, particularly for the contaminants of concern that weren't in SFEET at the time. And it was really a collaborative effort between the regulatory agencies and the responsible parties to together look at the SFEET results and revise what those performance goals should be. And SFEET was really instrumental in saying, these are the mass, source strength in terms of mass flux, concentration, what does that have to reach to be protective of the groundwater? So we're working backwards instead of looking at what's the impact of groundwater, what's your goal for the groundwater, and what does the SVE system need to attain to meet that goal? So that was really, really important. And they moved forward with those revised goals. So here's the example. This is 1-1 dichloroethane. Again, essentially back calculating from the groundwater concentration of interest to determine what does the source strength need to be to achieve those groundwater goals. So they put together a performance standards report to describe the process and what was the approach here, how do we do this. There was an explanation of significant difference issued that incorporated these adjustments to the performance targets. And then there's a performance monitoring plan. Of course, that's important. Here's what we expect and here are our goals, and let's watch how that performance works over time. So, all right. So just a few conclusions about SFEET. Again, it's an easy to use tool, makes use of readily available data, and it's a spreadsheet. So you plug in the numbers, you get your results. Even though there's 5,000 some simulations behind it, the results are instantaneous, which is pretty impressive, in my opinion. And it provides reasonable concentration estimates. So these are generally conservative with respect to decision-making. If we're talking about making decisions about shutting down SVE system, it's important that we're leaning towards that conservative side at the higher concentration estimates. And it provides this defensible estimate of contaminant transport, right? This has a rigorous underlying basis to support remedy decisions about, are we done? What should the performance goals be? What do we, you know, what do we, what does it look like in terms of vapor intrusion concerns? So it has a solid basis for that. So here's some broad perspective, you know, takeaways. The guidance that we put together, along with, you know, Corps of Engineers and EPA authors, right? It offers a useful structured approach to assess this the SVE performance. Kind of walks through this process, provides resources for things like determining the source strength and location. So we're updating the CSM and regulatory context, quantifying impacts of the remaining contamination with the SVEET tool, or it could be other methods, but the SVEET tool is a handy way to do that. And then use those results to go through this decision logic and determine the appropriate outcome. And so this is not how to shut down SVE, it's how to assess your system and determine the right path forward. So that may be termination of SVE, but it could be that you need to optimize or focus on a particular hotspot, or maybe just go to a different technology because this one isn't working in the time frame that's required. So this provides a good basis for communicating with regulators to facilitate that decision making and acceptance. And so at this point, Jean, I think we have another poll.
We absolutely do. So let me go ahead and launch our second poll. So ladies and gentlemen, there's going to be a new pop-up that appears on the screen, this time asking you two different questions, real quick and easy. Did you learn something new? A yes or a no? And then how likely are you to look further into this guidance and this SVEET tool for application at your site? Not likely, somewhat likely, or very likely. So again, simply click the circle to the left of the responses that best represent you, and then hit the submit button. It does look like about half of you have shared your thoughts, so I do appreciate that. I'll give you all just a few more seconds to respond. And I will also let the audience know we are going to break for a Q&A period here in just a few moments. There were a number of questions that have already come in. There definitely is one overwhelming question that most of them are asking, but I think it's not a surprise. But I just wanted to remind everyone, you can continue to submit those questions and comments because we will be taking a Q&A break here very shortly. So I'm going to go ahead and close this poll here just in 3, 2, 1. And it does look like, Christian, you were successful. 98% learned something. So consider that a win.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that because, again, this is about awareness and tech transfer. So appreciate hearing that.
Yeah, and it does look like we've got some parties who are certainly interested in using the tool and the guidance now that they're aware of it. So great. Well done.
Excellent. Great. So I just have another slide here. So I do have some key references. We do have a website. So you might, if you want to take a screenshot of this, this is the project website. And so this has information about the guidance. So you can access the document itself, as well as the SVEET software. And there's actually some flow charts as well. Some of the flow charts I've shown here are available. So it's pretty handy. There's a couple of references that I cited. They're kind of some key references, the guidance itself. Then we have several published journal articles in GWMR. One about this, the first one talks more about the underlying modeling and the version 1. And then we talk about the updates in version 2 in the second one here. And that's all I have for my presentation. So thanks for listening, and I'll be happy to take questions.
All right. Thank you so much, Christian. I'll just remind the audience that we did send out links to the websites and the guidance that you were just highlighting. So those have been included in the meeting chat. We also have those posted on the seminar homepage as well under the related links and resources area. So if you're looking for that or you didn't grab your phone in time, don't worry. Put it in the chat for you, and I will send an email with those links as well as a follow-up item. But I think for now, let's go ahead and jump on into the Q&A.
I'm just gonna mention one thing while we're sure. Right here. So PNNL does have the Center for Remediation of Complex Sites. I'll encourage you to go take a look at that as well. That's a broader thing that PNNL is doing to bring folks together to discuss issues and solutions for complex sites.
And I will put the link in the meeting chat to that center as well, so they have direct access to that.
Great, thank you.
Okay. So I'm going to jump right into some of the questions about applicability with the tool to certain scenarios. So our first question is asking, if I want to use an air sparge system to enhance the SVE that I've got at my site, can I incorporate the air sparging into this Speed 2 for simulation?
No, because again, really the SVEET tool and the whole process, the guidance here is to look at what is happening with that soil vapor extract, Vadostone source. What are the impacts of that on the groundwater or soil gas in the absence of treatment technologies? So what you would do in that situation is you might, if you have an SVE system, And you pause it to do a rebound study, get some source strength information, do some performance assessment, and use SVEET at that point to say, well, what does it look like the impacts are with the residual source? If that says, it's not looking so good, I got to keep running or I need a different technology, then you do take your air sparging and apply that and then come back again. That'd be another step, is that, you know, and this kind of falls in line with adaptive site management, right? You don't just do one thing and that's it. Right? Set it and forget it. No, you really need to consider how the conceptual model evolves over time, what happens over time. So you'd come back and revisit this after application that air sparging or other technology.
Okay. Another question, can we use this SVEET model for non-volatile or semi-volatile organics?
Not the non-volatile, because this is really about vapor phase transport. there's a list, and if you go download the software, let me see if I can jump back up here. I'll show you. Find this slide right here. So this is the list of contaminants right here. What was in SVEET 1 and SVEET 2. So there's some that might be semi-volatiles in here, but this is kind of what we're constrained to. You know, that might be something that you could talk to me specifically and maybe we could make some adjustments for some additional contaminants. Really need to have things like the Henry's law constant, that's a key parameter here to estimate what's happening. It's probably one of those things that there's not a strict bound other than what you can select from contaminants, but there probably is some bounds on where, you know, the estimates may start to deviate more and more from reality as you get to less volatile contaminants.
Okay. Okay, let's go to another one. Sometimes groundwater sampling is used to assess risk. And they go on to say where the pump intake is placed can greatly influence the groundwater zone that's being sampled. So Great. They wanted to know, what depth of mixing does SVEET 2 use when it's estimating the resulting groundwater concentration?
Yeah, so let me see here. There's actually an option for that. Let me find the screen. This is a little tiny. Oh, here. So this is pretty tiny. So don't squint. But when you open the software, it actually asks the screen length. There's several options in here for what you're estimating in terms of if it's groundwater, it's how far down gradient are you talking about? And there's a limit on that, 1,000 feet or something like that. I forget. And then you describe what's your screen length, right? So it's really from the groundwater table downwards. So you could say, oh, I've got a 3-foot screen at the groundwater table, or maybe it's a 10-foot screen, right? So it does adjust for that. And it's based on, again, the numerical model that includes this multi-phase transport. So it includes the mass transfer into groundwater and mixing and dispersion and everything. So it captures that. What it doesn't capture would be if you don't start at the top of a groundwater table, if you're down lower in the aquifer. So I hope that answers the question.
Okay. We have another question. Again, this is all application. So they wanted to know if you could comment on the pros or cons of seasonal operation of SVE in locations where shallow soils could freeze during the winter month and the depth to water is pretty large. They go on to say that seasonal operation is typically protective of groundwater and cost-effective at sites where you have sort of like long-term operation where this is going on for years instead of months. They just wondered if SVE2 could be used to evaluate if this seasonal operation would work as a replacement for continuous operation.
Well, it's not specifically intended for that application. And I guess I would say Dave Becker, who we work with at the Corps of Engineers, would probably be a better person to answer that question. He's got a lot more experience in, you know, they've got the cold regions lab and other places like that where they've done work. But I think the answer is basically no. This is not really intended to determine operational strategies, mm-hmm. other than what are the next steps, right? So where do you go from here? But in terms of like pulsing or cyclic operation, not specifically intended to determine that.
Okay.
I think there are other resources, and our guidance document really tries to point at some of the Corps of Engineers design documents and other resources for other kind of standard design elements.
Okay.
And our guidance, you know, just walks through the performance assessment process, which was kind of a gap in existing guidance. So
okay.
That's my short answer.
Sure. All right. Well, how about this situation? What about the situation where you have a source that's close to the building? So you have advective flow into the building, which is driven by the stack effect. Is this a scenario or setup where the model could be used?
Yeah, that is not accounted for. Again, this is okay. Natural flow conditions, and it's a diffusion dominated transport.
Okay.
So it doesn't include advective components.
Okay.
Nearby buildings.
Okay.
You know, that would be, you know, I'll just say that would be something that, you know, we use the STOMP model, the multi-phase model, to do these simulations. And so you could put together a site-specific model that would account for that. You know, to have different boundary conditions at the surface to represent your building and the stack effects or building effects. So that can be done, but not through SVE2.
Okay. And I did want to circle back to the question that you just answered previously, referencing or pointing individuals to check with Dave Becker, some resources from him. Mm-hmm. Dave Becker is actually here with us. He's on the line. And so Dave Becker did want to share his thoughts on that question about seasonal operation. Yeah. So he noted that he thinks that the user will have to account for seasonal operation based on a factor of safety in the predicted concentrations. And that's how you might be able to apply it. If you're testing that or trying to model for that. So thank you, Dave. We appreciate you chiming in and sharing that perspective. Okay, just a few more questions here again on applicability. One of the participants noted that in managing vapor intrusion possible strategies, they're trying to look at a scenario where they're going to run SVE longer at a lower flow rate just to capture the ongoing diffusion out of the source. And they wondered if they could use this tool to help them do an evaluation for the economical and technical feasibility of that approach.
That may be possible. Again, this is not going to represent active SVE operations, right? But you could potentially, you can do some sensitivity analysis, what if scenarios to look at, okay, if we do run soy vapor extraction a certain way, and here's our estimated impact on the source strength, right? You could look at that different source strengths. Mm-hmm. And see, okay, what is the impact on the groundwater concentrations? But again, it's not going to represent advective flow from SBE, you know, anything like that. So I think it could be a complementary tool.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Would this work for gasoline range TPH as the primary target for mass removal?
Yeah, I think we have BTEX in here. Yeah, so there's BTEX constituents that are represented. So yes.
Okay. All right. So this question sort of steps back. We have a lot of people asking about shutdown and exit strategies, and if you could use the tool to help determine or help come up with an optimized exit strategy plan for a site.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what this is intended for. I mean, the soil vapor extraction end state tool is what the acronym stands for. And the Hanford example, I think, illustrates that approach. You know, there's a lot of things have been gone on at Hanford, a lot of studying, right? But the approach was to go through this guidance process and assess where are we at? What is the conceptual model? Where are we at in terms of soil gas concentrations and the source strength, and then estimate those impacts. So definitely SWEET would help with that.
Okay. All right. Speaking of Hartford, one of the attendees wanted Hanford. To know what reference is the paper from that site? They noted that they thought the source zone geometry is challenging to define, so they wondered if you had thoughts on that.
Or that was I think that was on Hanford.
Yeah.
Let me flip down to, there was this one here. Yeah, so this was a DoD site, and I will not say specifically which site. Unless they were to give me permission. again, this was a site that DoD has. They have multiple source areas, so they have multiple SBE systems. And the Vado zone is fairly thick at this site. So I think that the issue is really, you know, here's the set of data that we have, right? So we have a certain amount of data. But I think this is probably true for a lot of sites, that sites don't necessarily kind of think about what does the source geometry look like. They're looking at monitoring data, what are the concentrations. So when we did our survey, we actually just had some sites that came back, and one was like a landfill. And so they said, well, the source area is the entire landfill. And so I think there's not always understanding from site managers of what does the source look like. And if you haven't gone out there and done some, pump tests or analysis of your SVE data, looking at mass discharge to define that geometry, that can be a little challenging. The thing is that, again, you know, folks like Mark Rousseau, Casey Carroll, they've done work on this to help define what those approaches are. And so our guidance walks through, here's some ways you can go out and do tests or analyze data to make some estimates of where's the source within the Vado zone, how big is the source, and what is the strength.
Okay. We do have a number of individuals who have asked questions, not about the tool, but they're asking mm-hmm. about applicability for SVE. So they give, you know, they have depth to groundwater of a certain range, or they're looking for how you might do sampling to determine certain factors at an SVE site. These are very site specific questions. And I just wanted to ask sort of broadly, if people have questions about the applicability of SVE or at a particular site, or if it's ever been done, could they reach out to you, Dave Becker? Who are the resources they can turn to if they have site-specific questions about SVE?
Yeah, I'll put myself out front and say you can contact me. And then, you know, I work with Dave Becker a lot, so, and his colleagues. But we can certainly answer questions along those lines. Happy to answer, take questions, and happy to contact me.
Okay. And this last question here that I will, to tee us up here, then there's one more just to circle back after this one. Mm-hmm. So this other question, do you see any applicability for the model in assessing shorter term pilot testing results from SVE that are part of a feasibility study? Or is the tool really best for longer term decision making for full scale systems that have been operating for a really long period of time?
Yeah, so it's, it is, I mean, there are a couple of applications here, right? So we talked about setting performance goals. What does the SVE system need to attain to be protective of the groundwater? And we talked about the diminishing returns. So those are definitely places where SVEET is intended to be used, right? To determine goals, to determine endpoints. And I talked at the start about when you're first looking at a site, evaluating is SVE needed even. So it could potentially be used for pilot testing, but it's really all about here's what the source is, either what you start with or what the residual source is, and what are the impacts of that source on soil gas or groundwater concentrations. So it may have some usefulness to assess pilot tests. I don't think that's specifically a targeted application. So it may be of limited use there.
Okay. We also did have Dave Becker who just chimed in and said he is happy to take questions as well. So I'm waiting to get confirmation if I can share his contact information with the audience. But I wanted to let everyone know if you asked about site-specific scenarios, if anyone's ever dealt with it at this particular depth, or how did they get to shut down, or have they evaluated criteria for shutting down when you have drums, and these more site-specific questions, those are usually best handled with one-on-one conversations offline with our presenters. So I'm going to work to get the contact information from Dave Becker and try to share that with all of you. Chris's information was on the seminar homepage, and we'll be able to get that all to you in a follow-up email. But I do want to turn to another question here, but I also see that a hand has been raised and we have a minute or two left here in our Q&A period. So for the individual who has their hand raised, first name Kelly. So Kelly, if you would like to unmute and ask your question out loud, I'm going to click a button and allow you to unmute if you'd like. Okay, so I see your hand is down. And if that means you no longer wish to ask your question out loud, that is okay. You can send me a message into the Q&A and just let me know if you no longer have that question. That is perfectly fine. And while we wait to see if Kelly says that they do or do not have a question, I'll still give you that option. If you do want to unmute, you certainly are welcome to. So Chris, you could imagine the number one question we got pretty much since the start of the presentation is how do I get my hands on the software? Is it free? And so wanted to be sure to circle back and confirm that how they can get to it, what they have to pay, how do they download it and install it?
Right. So the main webpage, the project webpage that you put the link in there, that's the best place to go. Because again, it kind of gives you that overview about the software. It provides the report, the guidance document, and then the software itself. And it is free. You can download it and use it. No restrictions on that. We built this with the intent of providing some tools that are useful to folks with SVE systems or Beta Zone sources. And so happy to see it applied. If people do use SVEET and apply it, I'd love to hear about that, right? So feel free to shoot me an email saying, hey, this worked great, or this was kind of weird, or, you know, just let me know. Happy to hear.
Excellent. That was actually going to be a follow-on question I'm seeing to come in here, that if you are looking for case study applications or feedback on the software from users.
Yeah. I'm certainly always interested in that. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Excellent. Well, it does look as though we have gone through the Q&A here that I have in my queue online right now, and I don't see any other hands raised. So, Chris, any final thoughts you want to leave the audience with before I walk through some closing reminders today?
Well, I, again, I, trying to do some tech transfer and make people aware. I think this process, and we actually have a parallel process, again, working with Dave Becker, Corps of Engineers, for pump and treat. I think these kind of processes are really useful. It provides that structured approach and the decision logic to say, these are the things you need to think about, and these are the kind of outcomes. And then, you know, you can come up with, you know, if you need to change to a different technology or do an enhancement, there's a lot of different options, right? So you can come up with what those options are to do a focus treatment or switch to thermal treatment or something. But it really provides a good structure and a rigorous underlying basis. So it's defensible when you go to regulators and say, this is our approach. This is what we're seeing in terms of estimates and the impact. So I think it's a really useful process for going through that performance assessment and having those discussions.
Excellent.
I'll say one more thing that, you know, we can talk about specifics of sites in terms of what's applicable. Is my site applicable, or how do I adapt my site to use FEET? I will say there are probably going to be some cases where your site is outside the bounds of what FEET could handle. And in that case, that's when you go to a site-specific numerical model. Using Stomp, and you put in, you know, I've got this heterogeneity or this particular, you know, concentrations, a source in the groundwater, for example, things like that, that are outside the assumptions and constraints of FEET. That may be the case, but I'm hopeful that a lot of sites will fit within the bounds of FEET and will be able to use this because it's intended as a user-friendly tool and a resource for you.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Chris. Mm-hmm. We are coming right up on that scheduled end time, so I'm going to go ahead and walk us through our final closeout materials. I'm going to swap the view here and take over the screen share. And I will start by just thanking you as well as Cindy for taking time to share your information and expertise on today's webinar. And I want to thank the over 175 professionals. Chris, I see a comment or question.
Well, I see in the chat, you put email in there, but you're missing a dot.
CD. Got it. Got it. Thank you. I will correct that. CD.Johnson, correct?
Right.
There we go. So corrected email came right back out. So for those of you who were able to join us live, I did share in the meeting chat emails for Dave Becker and for Chris Johnson. We also have that information on the seminar homepage. So if you did want to follow up with your site-specific questions, we've got the contact information in the chat for you. And so as I was saying, I want to thank all of you who joined us. We did have over 175 individuals join us for today's live broadcast. We really appreciate your time and attention in the session. I do encourage you to visit us on the Cleanup Information Network or cluein.org because we do have a wealth of information resources on cleaning up and characterizing hazardous waste sites. If you're not already subscribed, please be sure to sign up for our free monthly newsletter, Tech Direct, which I send out on the first of each month, which highlights free online technical transfer sessions like today's webinar. Now, there is a seminar homepage. We talked about it at the beginning of the webinar. We're going to talk about it at the close of the webinar. The URL is shown in red on this slide, and I have a screenshot of a sample one of these pages here. That seminar homepage contains copies of the presentation materials, contact information for our speakers, and links to all of the websites and resources that Chris was highlighting in his presentation. So for those of you who are looking for copies of the references that Chris highlighted, you can download a copy of his slides right from the seminar homepage. So that seminar homepage is active from today forward. The URL is right there. I will put it back into the meeting chat again before we close out today. I will also remind everybody that the seminar homepage was the same place that you went when you registered. It's the same place you went when you checked in for today's live event. So it's in the confirmation and reminder emails. So you can simply bookmark that and reference it. And it's available from today on, so you can certainly forward it on to other colleagues who you think will find the resources useful. You can point them to this page. Now, one of the important things that's on that seminar homepage, if you scroll up and down, you'll see a link to our seminar feedback form. We do want to know what you thought of today's session. If you can believe it, I read each and every one of the feedback form submissions that comes in for our sessions, and they do help us continue to offer these technical sessions for free and improve future deliveries. So I'll ask you all to take just a brief moment, visit that seminar homepage, scroll down to the feedback form section, and fill that out. If you fill out the feedback form, you can receive a participation certificate once you submit that form. Please be sure when you're submitting your form to properly enter your own email address and then look at the bottom of the form. There'll be a checkbox where you check off and certify you were here for the entire delivery. And then as soon as you submit your feedback form, you'll be able to download or print out a copy of a participation certificate, just like this one, that has all the details for today's session. We will also email a copy of that to you, but sometimes those get blocked by junk or spam filters. So I do encourage you to download the certificate as soon as it's presented on the screen once you submit the form. And if you happen to host a viewing party or have others who joined you at your location but didn't necessarily register on their own, simply give them the link to the seminar homepage and they can all fill out that feedback form on their own, even though they didn't register on their own, and they can get their own participation certificate based off of joining you. And we can get their feedback. So again, that URL shown in red is where you can find all of the resources, the links, the contact information, and that feedback form link. Our session today was recorded. You'll automatically get an email from me as soon as the archived version is available for free on-demand playback, and I encourage you to share that with other colleagues. And if you happen to be one of the lucky people watching the recorded version right now, somewhere around now in the recorded version, just above my head in the archive in the upper right, there's going to be a button to the seminar homepage and the seminar feedback form. So you can still fill out that form based off of your replay of the recorded version. You can check the box certifying that you replayed the entire session and still get a certificate of participation for your own records based off of watching the archive. So with that, again, I want to thank Chris and Cindy for joining us, as well as all of you who chimed in for today's live online session. We hope that you found this to be a valuable expenditure of your time, and we'll see you on a future Cluin seminar. With that, I'll go ahead and formally conclude today's live broadcast. Thank you so very much for joining us.